Chapter 14. Captain DuPont stood just outside the DA's office. He swallowed hard, but the lump in his throat would not drop. He looked to the ground. He knew what had to be done, and he knew a lot of good men would die before the week was up.
"Come over here,"
a voice said from the corner of the building. The captain looked up and to his right side. He squinted his eyes to see from whom the voice had come. He could not see into the darkened alleyway.
"Come here now. I have a word for you."
Captain DuPont began his approach to the alley. The captain's eyes widened when he stepped into the unlit alley.
"I thought you were dead. We seen the body,"
Captain DuPont said, staring at the former FBI agent.
"By now you should know that things are not always what they appear," said Robert Stone as he adjusted his necktie. "Things went south here fast. The Ripper has been called in to clear up any and all messes. The assassins have been dealt with. The feds want us gone as soon as Death Calling is recovered, and I need you to pull your cops as far away from the situation as possible, or they also will become casualties."
"I pulled Manson off the case, but he is tenacious."
"Then you are saying he will not stop his search?"
asked Stone as he peered at the captain through mirrored sunglasses.
"Yes, I am afraid he will continue his hunt no matter what I say. I put him off of active duty thinking that would sideline him."
"Then I will take care of him. That is, if the Ripper has not discovered his involvement yet."
The captain's face flushed red.
"Look, I did not call for any of this. You and your people brought this war to me. I wanted it out of my state, but you brought it here just the same. You have told me nothing. I had no idea you were bringing Callahan to our shores. I would have at least sent a detail to make sure he got here safe."
"There is nothing you can do now. Callahan was part of our problem. He was supposed to lead us to the ones behind it all."
"Yeah, all of these years you and your agency have been making deals with the devil, and then the devil calls you on it, and now you have a mess. If any of this gets out, you and the motives of our great nation will be in question."
"No, this does not go that high. It's just a few agents left over from the Great War.
And I am not cooperating any longer. In fact, I will call the president myself and..."
"You will do nothing, Captain,"
Stone said as he stepped closer to DuPont.
"So you are going to kill me here on the streets and risk expose..."
No one heard the gunshot from the silenced .44 caliber pistol. The bullet tore through the chest of Captain DuPont, sending his lifeless body to the pavement. Stone turned to look over his shoulder.
"Get him out of here," he said with a growl.
The evening sun was now a beautiful glow as it shined over the skyline of Detroit. He was not in the city now. He was just on the outskirts across the river. He had made it to Canada. He was not going back. He could see inside his mind now, something he had not been able to do for a long time. His mind was taken from him years ago, and it was replaced with other thoughts, thoughts that were only to obey. He was kept in a sleeping state until he was needed. Then something happened when he heard the word, "son." He remembered bullets tearing through him. He remembered a bomb blast nearby, and then he remembered nothing. He woke up in a laboratory. He could not feel his body anymore. He thought he was in shock. Then he heard a familiar voice.
"My son, you are alive."
He blinked his eyes in recognition of his father, and then he heard others in the room.
"Stand away from him, Callahan. We have lived up to our agreement. Now you will help with others,"
a man said with a thick Russian accent.
"What are your plans for my son?" he heard Callahan ask.
"Never you mind. He is not your son any longer,"
the Russian said. Jason Callahan sat at the edge of the water, staring across to the United States. He looked at his robotic arms and cringed at the blades that protruded from each one. "Death Calling," he heard inside his mind once again.
"What is your mission?" asked the Russian accent.
His head turned slightly. Half of his face was covered with a metal plating,
Only a red dot can be seen in place of his natural eye.
I kill Alan Romaine, Death Calling said.
Good, he is ready for his mission, the Russian added.
Death Calling was remembering it all now, the missions, the slaughter of innocents, and then he was sent to kill his father. He remembered when the war ended. He remembered fighting soldiers to get some scientists out of Russia. He remembered sitting in a foreign land. And then he was placed in a sleep state. After what seemed to be a short, but in reality it was a matter of years, he was awakened and sent to kill Callahan. They will come for me again, he thought, as he stared at his masked reflection that shone from the waters that divide the two countries. Death Calling stood to his feet. He looked at his bandaged arms. He flexed a muscle in each forearm and the blades broke free from their bonds and stood straight out facing the water. He pulled the mask tighter on his neck to keep it from being removed easily. I will no longer run, he said as he dropped his overcoat to the ground. I will face my stalkers head on now, he thought as he took a step into the freezing water. The office building set in the center of Detroit. It was taller than all the rest that surrounded it. It was built on the backs of hard-working, underpaid men. It was built for a purpose, to show the world that Manny Van Johnson was the boss. The long black limo spooled to a stop in front of the grand structure. The driver quickly stepped out to open Lips Malone's door.
All right, you guys, stay close,
Malone said as he made his way to enter the building.
I need to see Van Johnson,
Malone said as he and four of his bodyguards stepped up to the secretary's desk.
May I ask your name, sir?
She said as she picked up the receiver of the phone. Malone looked over his shoulder toward his men, slightly embarrassed by the question. He mumbled his name to her.
Yes, sir,
she said into the receiver.
Yes, sir,
she said again, and then she hung the phone up.
Please, gentlemen, if you would sit over there, I will call you when his meeting is over.
Malone sat for nearly 3 hours before the receptionist called him in to see Van Johnson. After a long walk along a hallway, a few steps, and an elevator ride to the top floor, he had arrived outside of Van Johnson's office. Malone stepped from the elevator first and was met by a large man.
Your boys will have to stay here, and I need to frisk you, so open up, the big man said.
Malone glanced over his shoulder to his guys who just stood awaiting orders. And then Malone opened his coat and began the process of gun removal. Malone was ushered into the inner office to where another large man sat behind a desk talking on a phone. He had the largest cigar Malone had ever seen hanging between his ring and index finger. He had large jaws and a nose that looked as though it had been broken more than a few times. His hair was black, graying at the temples. It was pushed front to back, but it came to a point in the front just on top of his large, high forehead. The man said a few more words into the receiver of the phone before hanging up.
What do you want, Malone?
I am busy, Van Johnson said as he flicked a large ash from his cigar.
Did you send somebody to my restaurant to kill one of my men?
Van Johnson looked up from the folder in which he had been staring at ever since Malone had entered the room.
Why would I care about your pathetic, vermin-filled little club when I have an entire empire to run?
Malone adjusted his coats nervously.
Someone in disguise came in and killed a man of my employ, and I want to know why.
Van Johnson looked at Malone this time with more of a glare.
Look, mouth, teeth, or lips, whatever you want to be called, I could not care less about you or your club. You think you own that part of the city. Well, you're wrong. I have business dealings with everyone around you, not excluding you. I let you keep what is yours out of respect for the old man. But make no mistake, I don't like you. I worked from the street to get where I am. All you did was inherit what you have from the old man. Know this, I can take what is yours any time, and I can destroy you in the process. Now,
Is there anything else?
Malone stood, staring at Van Johnson as he tried to keep his legs from shaking.
What about the Russians?
Van Johnson set his cigar down. Don't worry about them. They will be gone soon, he said in a cold manner.
Now, is there anything else?
I guess not,
Malone said as he turned to leave.
Remember, Malone, you have what you have only because of me.
Malone paused as the words hit his ears. He said nothing, but deep down he knew his days were numbered. Carl made his way into the entrance of his small apartment. He put the key in the door, but the force of the key pushed the door inward slightly. Someone is here, he thought as he took the knob and gently and slowly pushed the door open.
Nice bit of work you have here,
said a familiar voice as Carl stepped into his apartment.
Beth, what are you doing here?
Asked Carl as he slid his detective's special .38 caliber revolver back into his coat pocket. Beth was sitting on the couch with her bare feet propped up on the piles of folders and papers that lay on the coffee table in front of her.
I thought I would stop by and do some light reading,
she said with a sly grin as she opened a folder. Her short, curly blonde hair was tousled and set mostly to the left side of her face. As she smiled and looked up at him, oh Lord, he forgot how big and beautiful her eyes were.
But why are you here? I haven't seen you for years, and now you're here all of a sudden. Why?
Carl said as he made his way around to where Beth was still sitting.
I have missed you, Carl, and I must say this story intrigues me to the utmost,
she said as she lifted a glass of wine to her lips.
How long have you been here?
Oh, long enough to see that you have been busy.
Carl looked around the room before sitting down on the couch beside Beth.
Oh, you are so paranoid. It is just I,
she said with another grin.
We used to have fun, didn't we, Carl?
He then sat back and grinned himself.
Yes, we did.
You know we can pick up where we left off.
Beth, I don't see how. I mean, you left in a bad way.
Yes, but I can come back in a good way.
Are you trying to distract me?
Of course I am. I want you to relax. You are working too hard on this, and you do realize it will probably get you killed.
You are just wanting the story. I know you, Beth.
Oh, Carl, stop this nonsense.
Then tell me, where did you go, and why did you never return?
I went to work on a story. I got too involved, and I had to lay low. And now, here I am.
Yeah, here you are, and I am just supposed to accept that?
Yep, that's the whole story.
Carl sat staring at Beth as she took another sip of her wine.
So tell me,
she began as she peered over the wine glass at Carl.
Are you still working with that detective? What was his name?
Manson?
Yeah, that's him.
On occasion.
He has you digging on this case, doesn't he?
No, it's always interested me,
Carl said as he stood to his feet to make his way to his refrigerator.
Why don't we work on this one together, Carl?
Asked Beth as she took her feet from off the table and placed herself into a sitting position.
Well, like you said, it will get us killed. And if one of us gets killed, I would rather it be me,
he said as he opened his refrigerator to reach for a beer.
Carl's head suddenly smashed into the side of the refrigerator. His body turned as the force knocked him to the side. His eyes were blurry as his back fell against the wall. Then he felt his legs being swept out from under him as he finished his descent to the floor. He tried to focus his eyes when he caught a glimpse of something silver and shiny.
I am sorry, my love,
Beth said as she gripped a long blade.
What are you doing?
Carl asked as he placed a hand underneath him to try and regain his balance.
I have to kill everyone involved in this. I wish you had not spoken to the mole,
she said as she stepped a still bare foot onto the linoleum flooring.
His door is open, a voice said from somewhere outside Carl's apartment.
Carl turned his head to face the door.
In here, Jack!
Carl screamed. Beth turned to face the entrance. Her eyes scanned the room to look for an escape.
Carl! Jack said as he pushed the door to fully open. As Jack entered the apartment, his eyes first met Beth's as she stood holding a large blade. Then he looked to the floor where Carl was still sitting. Beth quickly turned to Carl and expertly flung her knife, sinking the blade into the right side of Carl's chest.
"Grab her!"
Jack said as Beth made a move toward the nearest window. Roger immediately made the move to grab her, but she was quick. Beth leaped into the air, placing the ball of her right foot onto the coffee table. She placed her left foot on the back of the couch, which springboarded her into the air. She then forced her body to spin. She extended her left leg, catching Roger York across the right side of the face, sending his body painfully into a circle, causing him to fall into a nearby end table. It all happened in just a matter of seconds. Jack pulled his pistol from his holster, but the much younger and quicker girl was well-trained. She caught his hand, sending the 1911 to the floor. Her next kick he saw coming. It was for his chin, but he shifted his body to the right, which sent her kick wild, causing her to stumble off balance. That's when his training and the words from his old master came into play. After all these years, he could still hear his old master in his ears.
"Jack, always start with the teisabaki, an evasive movement. It is not Aikido if not started by avoiding the oncoming attack, even if the attack is a mild or slow one."
Beth's next attack was anything but slow. She sent a hard-balled fist towards Jack's face. He stepped in a circular motion, causing her punch to be clumsy, and then quickly grabbed her by the wrist and shifted his body back, causing Beth's own weight to be used against her, sending her feet into the air as she fell hard against the coffee table. She lay for a few seconds to gather her next move. She could not let them catch her. She had to get away. She shot a glance toward the window again. She made a leg sweep toward Manson, which caused him to reposition his body, which in turn gave Beth enough time to make it to her feet and leap through the glass. Before Jack could respond, Roger had already made it to his feet and was out the door with his pistol drawn.
"Carl," Jack said as he made it to the side of the reporter. "Are you still alive?"
asked Jack as he knelt beside the wounded man.
"Yes,"
Carl mumbled. Jack quickly turned and grabbed the phone to call for the paramedics.
"She is gone,"
Roger said as he re-entered the room.
"But she is cut,"
he added as he held up a couple of bloody fingers.
"There was a trail.
She must have cut herself pretty good on that window," Roger added as he made his way to where Carl still lay.
Chapter 15. Her name is Beth Stidham. She is around 29, blonde hair, blue eyes, petite in size, around 5'5", Manson said as he watched the paramedics load Carl into their vehicle. "I want a 24-hour watch outside his room, and keep an officer here tonight as well," said Manson as he looked toward Carl's apartment.
"Where's the captain?"
Roger asked the sergeant who had been taking down Manson's statements.
"I have no idea.
No one has seen him since this morning."
"All right. Try to reach him at home."
"How is your jaw?" Manson asked as he shifted his attention to Roger.
"For a little woman, she packs one heck of a kick,"
Roger said as he continued to rub his swelling face.
"She was obviously trained," said Manson as he turned toward his car.
"We need to talk to the captain," Manson said as he crossed the street.
"You did what?"
Commissioner Tillman said as he stood from his desk.
"He was in the way and threatened everything. We need to leave this city," Stone said as he watched the panic-stricken commissioner pace around the room.
"Who are you going to kill next? Me? The mayor? When will it end?"
"It will end when we retrieve death calling."
"I was told that Callahan was coming in to turn evidence."
"He was."
"Then why is our government working with these scientists to kill him off?"
the commissioner shouted.
"It's not as simple as that," Stone said. "Callahan defected. He reached out to the U.S. However, the U.S. has been wanting to put this behind us for years. Also, those scientists have been continuing their work and are funded by several countries. The U.S. is one of them. In fact,
I would not be standing here today if it were not for their technology. You see, the death calling program was to be terminated because it reflected back to a bad part of history. Death calling was sent here to do a job, and his handlers were sent in to retrieve him, and then end his life as well. The agent on the pier, well, he was just a casualty of war. Once we retrieve Death Calling, we will pull the Ripper out of here and you can have your city back.
Who is next on the list?
My last contact with the Ripper said that there was another reporter that needed dealt with, and possibly a couple of detectives.
How am I supposed to explain all this?
That is not my concern. I have orders from the top offices here in the States. There is a lot of my agency involved, and Callahan darn near toppled it all. So I suggest you start working on a good story that will cover the disappearances of the two detectives, a reporter, and the police captain.
But what about this Death Calling? He is still running around my city.
I will see to Death Calling personally. I have given the Ripper orders to get rid of the reporter and then the detectives, in that order. And once all is done, we will be gone, and you will never hear from us again. I suggest you speak with the Daily News. Talk to Mr. Dykes. We have dealt with him before. Give him the story to run about how brave these detectives were and how courageous the captain was, and end it with that. The commissioner made his way to his chair and fell back into it.
Then I never want to see any of you again.
That's the plan, Stone said as he made his way to the door.
Mr. Van Johnson, sir, there was an attempt. It seems the Russians have yet to recover their package,
the man said as he stood in front of the large oak desk. The sun had already set on his city. His windows reflected all of the lights below. He stood looking out the giant window as he puffed on his cigar. You know, Michael, when these Russians first contacted me about Callahan coming into my city, I was a bit curious as to why they would contact me of all people. It seems they have the police, the papers, and the mayor's office in their pocket. But why would they want my help to get into the city? Said the big crime boss as he folded his large arms behind his back. He puffed hard on the enormous cigar. Michael stood silently as he watched his boss ponder the question. I like what it is they are doing over there, building the mechanical parts and all, making humans into robots. That fascinates me, Van Johnson said as he reached up to take the cigar from his mouth. I believe they wanted my help because I can get them in and out of the underworld without detection, he said as he puffed again. I want you to bring me one of their people, he said as he turned to look at his right-hand man.
But sir, why have they wreaked havoc over the city? It would draw attention to us.
This is true, but I want the one they are looking for. The assassin. I want him. From what information I have gathered, he is one of their machines which they mean to destroy, Van Johnson said as he sat down in his large chair. I want to find him first. Let's take a roll call, shall we? We have the feds, then the police. We have the reporters. Oh, and the Russians, and their Ripper fellow. And yet no one has found the real threat. I want him. He turned to look back out of his window. I grew up in this cesspool. I fought hard, got many bruises, been shot and stabbed a number of times. I know this city in and out. I want this man found and brought to me.
What if we encounter this Ripper or the Russians?
We can easily make a deal with both. The feds are my concern. They want it cleaned up and pushed back to whatever country they are hiding these scientists in.
I will put our best men on it,
Michael said as he turned to face the door. The door to the hotel room slid open. She limped in with her right foot on its side as blood poured from the sole of her instep. She eased the door shut and leaned back against the cool wood. Beth unfastened the small leather patch from around her neck that contained the speech translator. She stretched her right arm out and flipped the light switch. Then she jumped as the sight of a man sitting on the edge of her bed gave her a fright.
Jason?
You want to kill me, Beth? Well, here I am, Beth Calling said as he looked at the young woman.
I don't want to kill you. It's, well, you know, they just want you back. I am sure once we are safe back at home, all will be forgiven.
I am remembering things, Beth. All at once, memories are flooding my mind.
Jason, I owe you my life. Well, you and the doctors that put me back together. I have to kill a man I once loved, and it is difficult to do. But I have to. You know the failsafe.
Yes, I was created before the implants were designed. I know what can happen if you do not follow their orders. I am sorry, Beth. I am not going back. They sent me to kill my father. I remember everything now. They used me to corrupt him, and he defected, and they sent me to kill him.
I know, Jason, and I am sorry. Your father was a decent man. He only worked for them to save your life. What about that do you remember?
I remember being in a trench and an explosion. Then I remembered being surrounded by lights, and then heard my father's voice. I heard someone say that they could save my life, but he would have to agree to help them in their endeavors. Then my memory of him was gone, until I killed him. Something happened. I can't explain it.
I am not hunting you any longer. I have new orders,
Beth said as she limped to sit in a chair that was placed beside the bed.
I was told to get rid of the detectives and the reporter, but Stone is coming for you.
Yeah, I figured it was only a matter of time.
Leave the city. Do not let him get a hold of you.
I am not running any longer, Beth. I am going to get Stone, then I will leave.
You know they will send me after you.
I know, Ripper, but I am not going back with you or anyone.
I know, Jason, but Stone will not stop. In fact, no one will. You are their prize.
I don't care. They will have to kill me then, Death Calling said as he stood and turned to leave through the window. He paused to turn and look at Beth. When this is done, they will terminate you as well. Beth watched him leave without adding any more words. She remembered when she was first looking into the Callahan case. Thomas put her on the trail. She followed it all the way to Russia and then Sweden. She was captured by a militant group and was beaten beyond recognition. Beth Calling saved her life and brought her to the scientists for repair. They changed her from a thrill-seeking reporter to an assassin. However, during the procedure, an implant was placed inside her skull, an implant that could be remotely detonated at any given moment. Her first job was to reveal all she knew about the programs. She told them everything, including the involvement of a reporter named Thomas. She was sent to assassinate him as her first mission. Since that time, she has been on many covert missions for almost all the democratic nations, and she has never failed. That is, until tonight, when all three of her targets were in the same room together, and they all still live. Chapter 16. What do you think it means? Asked Roger as he sat in the passenger seat of the sedan. I'm not sure yet. If his wife has not heard from him, then something is afoot, and we need to find out what is up.
Are you thinking the worst? Because I sure am.
I don't know, Roger. I think he might be in trouble. It seems like everyone who knows anything about this case is either in law enforcement, dead, or dying.
Do you think Carl will survive?
Jack glanced at his friend for a moment. Yes, Carl is tough. I just hope the guard outside his door is as tough. I think they will make a play for him again.
I just cannot wrap my head around Beth being an assassin. When we knew her, she was just a skinny little girl who wanted to be a reporter.
I know, Raj. Something happened to her, and I would like to find out what. I will swing by and get you in the morning, Jack said as he slowed the car in front of Roger's home.
Okay, Jack. Be careful tonight. Are you sure you won't stay? I mean, with everything that has taken place. I don't live in the city like you. Whoever is running around killing people would not find my house so easily.
Go, Roger, and tell the family goodnight for me, Jack said as he pulled the shifter into drive again. All the way home, the events poured into Jack's head. An old scientist, the FBI, Russians, and now a reporter no one has seen or heard from in years all show up. Could the FBI be hiding something here? Or are they after the same ones we are? And the missing bodies? Jack was so deep in thought he had not realized he had already made it back to his apartment building. He went through his usual routine with the exception of sitting in his favorite chair. Instead, he went straight to his bed that was waiting for him, like an old friend who was ready to give him comfort. He laid his tired head back onto his pillow. Then he did something he had not done in years. He fell fast asleep. Shortly after, he could see him, the old Japanese man. The man seemed ancient. He was sitting as he always had, with his legs bent as he sat on his calves with a fresh pot of tea in front of him. After the war, Manson came home to an unfaithful wife. His life was destroyed. He sold his home in the suburbs and reenlisted into the army. He went back to die. He traveled as far up the mountain as his body would allow. He stumbled and fell many times, but still he climbed. And then he gave up and fell face down into the snow. He had no idea how long he lay there. It wasn't until he felt a sharp poke into his back that he awoke. He roused from his unconscious state and flashed his eyelids a few times to see an old man standing above him. The old man spoke something in Japanese that Manson could not understand, so Manson just laid his head back down into the snow. When he woke again, he felt warmth. He raised his head and he felt secure. He was covered with heavy blankets. He opened his eyes and he could see that he had been placed in some sort of oriental structure. Then he heard the sliding of a door and he looked to see the old man again. This time he was carrying a tray with a pitcher and two cups. "Where am I?" asked Jack as he watched the old man place the tea tray onto the floor beside him.
"Tea can be a sacred thing,"
the old man said as he lifted the pot. "You speak English."
"I speak many languages,"
the old man said as he handed Jack some hot tea.
"Savor the aroma first before you indulge."
Jack lifted the cup to just under his nose. He closed his eyes and let the aroma flow over him, and somehow it made him feel better.
"Why are you here?"
Jack lowered the cup to look at the old man. "I came here to die."
"Is this so?"
the old man said as he took a drink of tea.
"Now, take and sip."
Jack took a drink, and the tea filled his insides in a way he had not felt before.
"I do not believe you have come here to die. No, I believe you have come here to live. I have seen into you as you slept. You have lived many lifetimes, and yet you only remember one,"
said the old man before taking another sip. "I don't understand."
"Of course you don't. Your mind has always been closed to the world around you. It needs to be opened."
Jack lowered his head. "But how?"
"No, not how. It is when,"
the old man said as he placed his cup back onto its tray.
"You are a gifted man, and yet you do not know it. Your life will take you back, then take you forward, and you will not even realize it. I will teach you to harness great power, but also greater humility. You will learn the way of Aikido, and I will show you the rest."
Jack lived with the old man for 2 years, learning all that he had to teach. He learned quick. He learned how to love. He learned how to fight, and how to avoid fighting. Then he was called home when he received word of his father's passing. Before he left, He vowed he would return, but the old man knew he would not. He wished his son well, and Jack returned home to join the police department and then become lead detective. Jack had not dreamed of the old man in years. He had not heard from him or even thought of him much. That is, until Beth tried to kill him. Then the old man's words were loud inside his head. He had let his life fall back from what the old man wanted for him. He began smoking after he joined the police department. That's when he also started drinking. After 3 years on the force, he all but stopped dating and threw himself into his work. His eyes flung open. He could see trickles of daylight coming through the windows.
I slept all night. What time is it?
He thought as he grabbed his wristwatch from off the nightstand.
6:30. When was the last time I slept this late?
He thought as he sat up in bed.
I am not here to kill you, said a voice from the corner of Jack's room. At the sound, his blood ran slightly cold as anyone's would if a stranger had made their way into the house in the middle of the night while they slept. Jack made no sudden moves, nor did he act surprised. Who are you? There was a silence, and for a moment Jack thought he might have been hearing things. But then, I am the one that killed the old man on the pier. I found you by calling the police station and asking who the lead investigator was on the case, and your name came up.
Yes, of course. What is your name? Asked Jack as he continued to try and see into the corner of the room.
I want to help you, and in turn, I need you to help me, the figure said.
How can we help each other? Unless I am wrong, you are an assassin, no doubt sent here to kill me as well.
No, I was not sent for you, but I know who was, and she will not stop until you are dead.
Yes, I know. She tried to kill Carl.
And she is also sent for you. Detective, I can tell you everything that has happened, before and after the war, that deals with this case. My memories are flooding back.
Why did you kill the old man and the agent?
Callahan was my father. He worked for the Russian scientist. He was turning on them and was escorted here. And I was sent to kill him and the FBI agent. They wanted no loose ends. They wanted Callahan's body back, but you got there first. I don't have much time. Stone will be on my trail soon, and...
Wait a minute. Stone is dead.
No, he is one of us, Death Calling said as he stepped into the light. Manson first noticed the large blades, then the covered face.
What are you?
I was human, but now I have no idea.
You can help me bring Stone in. And what of Beth?
She is one of their better creations. She is fast and powerful.
Yeah, so I've noticed. All right, where do we start? Jack asked as he grabbed his trousers.
Beth will want to finish what she started. So she will come for whoever is still alive on her list. Stone will not be too far behind.
Oh, no! Carl, he is still alive and is at the hospital.
That is where she will finish him.
Are we sure about this?
Asked the man holding the large shotgun down to his side.
The boss wants Van Johnson dead, so we do it. Could be fun. Said another man as he gripped a Thompson submachine gun.
But John is never seen leaving anywhere. The old man is paranoid as they come, said the first man.
I know, but he always goes to his office at 7 a.m., so we wait, said the second.
At exactly 7 a.m., a large limousine began making its turn into the lower parking garage of the Van Johnson building. Both men steadied their weapons. And when the limo was in full view, both men opened fire on the car. Inside the limousine, Van Johnson sat and watched as the bullets bounced off the windows and door panels. The driver was dodging bullets that were nowhere near to harming him.
Well, I guess the fool wants a war.
As soon as the weapons depleted their ammunition, The two men made a dash for the exit. However, the driver, anticipating this move, put the large vehicle in reverse, cutting off the exit for the two men.
"Hurry! Reload!"
the first man said as he neared a panic. Van Johnson stepped from his car, followed by his four bodyguards. He was much larger than the two that were wrestling to reload their weapons. "Bulletproof. Your fool of a boss should have known that," said Van Johnson as he neared the two men. The first looked up.
"He did,"
he said as his eyes fell to the three men that came from behind some parked cars. The two bodyguards in the rear took the first two shots to their backs, but they did not go down. They both turned and brandished pistols. One of the guards fired, hitting one of the three would-be assassins in the skull and killing him instantly. Van Johnson turned back to face the two men as they had already loaded their weapons. What they did not count on was the speed of the big man. He quickly grabbed the shotgun and forced it to the side, causing the assassin to squeeze the trigger, shooting his partner in the face, sending him to the ground, dead. Johnson turned to see the remaining assassin lying on the ground in the same fashion. "We also wear bulletproof vests under our clothing," he said as he turned back to face the shotgun man. "Boys, call in Specs. Tell him to take down the Malone family tree," he said before turning the shotgun on the final assassin. Manny Van Johnson made his way to his office.
"Sir, someone is here to see you,"
his secretary said as he passed by her. He then stopped after hearing the words. "Who is it?"
"Some FBI agent, or so he says."
"Thank you, Margaret. Well, Agent Stone, to what do I owe this pleasant and unexpected visit?" Van Johnson said as he made his way around his desk. "My employers wanted me to stop by and say we were pulling out tonight, and they are grateful for the help you provided with transportation and such." Van Johnson reached into his ornate humidor that sat on the corner of his desk and pulled out a cigar. "Also, I have been authorized to share with you a file containing some research that scientists have been working on." "Keep it. I want death calling." "Where did you hear that name?" "That is none of your concern. This is my city. I know everything that goes on here." "You are not getting death calling. Once he is reclaimed, he will be coming back with me." "I came from these streets," Van Johnson said as he walked to his window, "and I keep in touch with what is going on down there. I know that on Thursday, the mailman spends a little extra time at Martin's house when he is away. He lives on that end of town. I know that Mrs. Withers is sometimes late with the rent because she spends too much on bingo. I also know that there is a rogue assassin in my town wreaking havoc. I know his name, and I know he killed his father, and you orchestrated your demise to get close to the body so that you could both escape unseen. I know that you'd saved Detective Manson's life during the explosion to further cover the fact that you are a sold-out FBI agent. Need I go on?" "How could you know all of this?" "I have people everywhere, Agent. I have people in the morgues. I have people on every street corner being paid a hefty wage just to be observant. I am the king of this city, and everyone bows to me. I now know that you want Manson dead, along with the reporter. I can arrange all of it for you in exchange for death calling." "I need to speak with my employers first." "Well, you had better hurry, because I got a phone call this morning saying a man wearing a mask was lurking around Manson's apartment building. Oh, and he was carrying three swords," Manny said as he placed a cigar in his mouth. "He is working with Manson?" "You know, I have always liked Jack Manson. He was the one cop I really could not get to. I always respected that. I knew that someday our paths would cross. I am glad they did," Van Johnson said as he sat in his chair taking several puffs of his cigar. He chuckled a little as he just remembered a joke. "You know, he and I share something." "Oh, yeah? What is that?"
Our names. My full name is Manson Van Johnson. Funny, wouldn't you say? All right, how can you arrange it? You still have a wounded man in the hospital that should be dead. Manson, no doubt, has figured this out by now. So if Death Calling has told him everything already, then chances are he will go and try to stop the Ripper from finishing the job, Stone said. Exactly so. If I were you, I would get over there as soon as I could, Van Johnson said as he took a long puff of his cigar. Chapter 17. The place was a buzz of activity. The lights were blazing 24 hours a day. The staff was tired from working all night, and the sun hadn't made its full ascent yet. She carried the tray with ease. Even though the cut in her right foot still pained her, she walked the walk of a nurse on a mission.
Good morning, officer, or evening, depending on when you came on duty,
Beth said as she gave the officer that stood guard outside of Carl Colvin's room a sly wink. The officer just nodded his tired head and returned the smile as he opened the door for Beth to enter the room. Beth slowly pushed the door inward. The room was dimly lit, and as she walked to the bed where Carl was laying, she heard something. Good morning, Detective Manson, she heard the officer outside the room say. Beth quickly ducked into the restroom and pulled the door shut. Outside and on the roof, someone else was lurking around. Death Calling stepped a foot onto the hard surface of the rooftop. His red telescopic eye darted in and out as he scanned the area for life. He walked a circle around the little shack that sat on the building. The shack served one purpose. It was an emergency exit. He knelt down after hearing what could only be footfalls in the gravel that covered the rooftop. Then, a quick and slight pain in his neck, he lifted a gloved hand to see what it was. He felt something even through the glove he wore. He pulled the object from his neck, a dart. He scanned the rooftop looking for the owner. Then he felt another in almost the exact same location on his neck. His one human eye was getting heavy, and he could feel his legs giving way. He fell to one knee, then the other. He braced both palms against the surface of the roof. Then he collapsed into darkness. "Has anyone come in here?" asked Manson as he stepped into the room. The guarding officer followed close behind the detective. "Yeah, a nurse came in just before you arrived," the officer said as he made his way to the window. Manson stood by the door, letting his eyes fall over the room. Nothing looked tampered with, but what did he know? He was no doctor. Without warning, Beth kicked the restroom door hard. The impact caught Manson, sending him against the wall. Beth then flung a large blade, hitting the guarding police officer in the neck. She then turned to Carl. "He loved you," Manson said as he rose to his feet, only a foot behind Beth.
"I know. But I am not the same woman I was when we met,"
she said as she continued to look down at the unconscious reporter.
"What has happened to you, Beth?"
"It's a long, horror-filled story, Manson."
"Come in. Let us help you."
"You better help your officer. He is bleeding out badly."
Manson looked to the fallen officer. He then looked to Beth, who was still standing dangerously close to Carl's bedside. Manson made his way to the officer, grabbing a towel as he went. Beth pulled another blade from a sheath that was concealed underneath her tunic. The gunfire deafened everyone in the room. Manson covered his ears, but Beth fell forward with two bullets in her back.
"Good Lord! Who are you?" Manson shouted.
"I was sent here to protect Mr. Colvin. I was hired by the Daily Newspaper," the pistol-toting man said as he stepped into the room. Manson stood to his feet. "I was called this morning and told to come here and protect Mr. Colvin."
"So the paper hired a bodyguard for him?" asked Manson as he looked to Beth's lifeless body.
24 hours earlier.
"Mr. Dykes, we have decided Mr. Colvin has become too much a liability, and therefore must follow the path of his predecessor. I suggest you print that he was a fallen hero, to at least save face,"
Agent Stone said as he walked the editor, Steve Dykes, to his car. Steve paused for a moment to rest his head against the door of the sedan.
When will this stop?
Once this has all been taken care of, Stone said as he turned to leave. Oh, and remember, just as I say, or you will be joining him. Steve watched the big agent leave. He then turned and made his way back to his office. He picked up the receiver and dialed.
Hello?
Mr. Van Johnson? I just received a visit from Agent Stone. They are going to kill Carl.
So what do you want me to do about it?
Well, sir, you own this paper, and Carl is our best reporter. It will not be easy to cover up, and...
And what?
And he is my friend, sir.
There was a long silence on the other end.
So they are going to take him from the hospital?
Yes, sir, I would assume so.
All right, call 555-7689 and tell the man on the other end you want to hire him to guard one of your reporters and kill anyone that tries to do him harm.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
Once this is done, I want you to get an exclusive with Manson about the entire case. I want it on every newsstand.
But, sir, they want this quiet, and the chances of Manson being left alive are...
I know all of the odds. Manson will survive the feds. Just do it. I want the story in my paper, and I want it to run for a month on every angle. You will be a hero, and my paper will be the number one paper in the country.
Yes, sir, Mr. Johnson.
Manny Van Johnson placed the receiver back into its cradle. He then lifted it and dialed another number.
Hello, the voice on the other end said. They will be at the hospital. That is where everything will go down. Get me what I ask for. You are the expert. You figure it out. Stone will show up also, of that I am sure. And so will the assassins. Just do not fail me. We have one shot at this.
Johnson placed the receiver back into its cradle and leaned back in his chair. He picked up a cigar and placed it between his lips and grinned. He then reached back to his phone and dialed another number.
Doctor, ready the lab.
24 hours later.
Has anyone seen the captain? He needs to know what is going on here, Manson said as he watched Beth being taken out on a gurney.
Jack, what on earth happened?
Roger said as he made his way through the crowd that had gathered outside of Carl Colvin's room. Jack took Roger by his elbow and led him to a place where there was no one standing.
I was visited this morning by a man that said he killed Callahan. He also went rogue and is helping me find everyone involved.
Where is he?
He said he was going to the roof. Roger, if you could see him, you would understand why he cannot come out into public. He has blades attached to his arms.
Well, now that Beth is gone, we should go find him.
All right, Roger. You stay here. I will go to the roof. Also, question the shooter there, Jack said as he pointed to the hired gun. I don't think he is who he says, Jack said as he headed toward the stairwell. Jack climbed the stairs as fast as his nicotine-stained lungs would allow. He reached the door to the roof and pushed it open. Then he stepped out. The cold air rushed against his face as he moved around the roof, looking everywhere at once.
Are you here?
He asked as he made the rounds over the rooftop.
I am here, said a voice coming from the north corner of the building.
The sun was up now, and Jack could make out the owner of the voice.
Stone! I thought you were dead,
Jack said as he made his way to the agent.
I saw you. You were almost in pieces.
Yes, and thanks to you, new friend, for that, Stone said as he moved toward Jack.
Where is Death calling? I know he has made some kind of contact with you.
I don't know anybody by that name, said Jack as he eased his hand under his overcoat to grip his pistol.
Oh, I'm sure you don't, Stone said as he turned to glance over the side of the building. There is a lot at stake here, Jack, and I need to clean up the loose ends, Stone said as he leaned against the railing.
But you're a federal agent.
I know. I also should have died during the war. I was wounded so bad that I was given up for dead.
Well, I had friends in high places, and they made some phone calls. I was sent to Russia and came back, let's say, a little more than a man. You see, the public is not ready for this kind of technology, yet. So I was sent in, deputized by the government, to clean this mess up. But why kill Callahan and the other agent? Callahan threatened to expose the whole operation, and he contacted the feds, and the news got to the right channels. There is a lot of involvement at play here. We just did not count on Death Calling going rogue on us. That was a surprise. All of this is because of him. If he would have just came back once Callahan was dead, none of this would be taking place. You had him kill his own father? His father threatened everything. Our government wanted to use the research into robotics to help fallen soldiers recover. The Russians wanted to make better soldiers, and everyone else wanted to profit from such dealings. But Death Calling changed everything. We needed to stop them, and I'm assuming Beth is dead since you are up here with me. We had no choice, Manson said as he lowered his eyes for a moment. Then I have to take care of that as well, Stone said as he pulled a small device from his pocket. What is that? Manson asked as he now gripped his pistol tighter. It is a remote detonator that was placed inside Beth's skull. Should something like this take place, we needed a fail-safe plan. No, wait, Jack said, but it was too late. The button had been pushed. Roger stood as he watched the paramedics wheeling Beth's lifeless body down the hall. He watched as the bodyguard walked alongside the gurney, and then the explosion rocked the hallway of the hospital. Nurses and doctors sailed into the air from the sheer force of the explosion. Roger, who was standing nearly 10 feet away, was knocked backwards and against the wall, causing him to fall to the floor. He looked up. He could see smoke had filled the hallway. He could feel heavy drops of water as the sprinkler system had been activated. He jumped to his feet. He immediately began aiding the fallen victims. Jack felt the earth move under his feet. Oh, Lord, what did you do? Jack asked as he looked down at the moving gravel. I eliminated evidence, and that is why I am with you here now, Stone said as he began to move in Jack's direction. Jack pulled his pistol and aimed it in Stone's direction. Stop, or I will kill you, Jack said as he took a step backwards. Go ahead, and then you will have to explain why you killed a federal agent. This is much bigger than you or I, detective. Manson squeezed 2 rounds off into the left leg of Agent Stone. The .45 caliber bullets easily deflected off the leg. I have no idea what kind of metal they use, but I have never found anything that can penetrate it. Manson then raised the pistol higher. However, the detective was not counting on how fast the big agent would be. In only a second, Stone had moved 3 feet closer to Manson, and in one swift motion grabbed the pistol from Manson's hand and tossed it to the ground. Today is the day that you die, Mr. Manson, Stone said as he drew back a powerful fist. The words of the old man were heard once again by Manson.
Stone has size and speed. Use that against him.
Stone's fist was thrown. Manson stepped to his left. In doing so, he deflected Stone's arm up and back. Stone's momentum went with it. This caused Stone to lose balance and stumble to his right. Manson took advantage and used his legs to sweep Stone off of his feet. Stone fell hard to the surface. Manson looked to where he had last seen his pistol. He knew with all the advancements inside Stone's body he would never be able to win a hand-to-hand battle, and dodging the man would only last for so long. Manson gripped his pistol and felt something tear into his shoulder. The force knocked him to the ground. I did not want to use gunfire. It brings too much attention, Stone said as he lowered his smoking pistol to his side. Manson rolled his body over to lay on his back. He lifted his left hand to his right shoulder and pulled his fingers away, revealing blood. You cannot win against us, Manson. Maybe not, but I sure can try,
Manson said as he lifted his pistol and began rapidly firing the 1911 into the face of Agent Stone. Stone stumbled backwards with every shot he took until he fell to the ground. Manson pulled himself to his feet. He looked to the place where Stone's head once was. He could see faint wiring running through the skull. "Monstrous," he said as he turned from the body. Across town.
"Bring me another coffee, doll,"
Lips Malone said as he sat around the conference table with his men.
"Boss, we still haven't heard back from Tommy and his boys,"
said William Rogers as he took his cup from the young waitress.
"Yeah, that means the hit went bad, and we are at war with the most powerful crime lord in town. We need to pull everyone in on this. Hey, Jessica, what are you doing there?"
Lips said as he looked to his waitress who had just latched the door. She turned to face the four men.
"Sorry, boss,"
she said as she pulled a pistol from underneath her coffee cart and began firing rounds into three of Lips' men.
"You have been working for Johnson all this time?"
"Yes, sir. He calls me Specs."
"But why? I've paid you well."
"Yeah, but you're never going to have the power that he has, and soon you will be a has-been. And now Manson Van Johnson rules all of Detroit,"
she said as she squeezed the trigger of her 9mm pistol, hitting the crime boss in the head and killing him instantly. 2 weeks later.
"Still no word of Captain DuPont?"
asked Carl as he made his way around Manson's desk with the use of a cane. "No. The mayor is in a frenzy. The media is tearing it up, especially with the report your paper ran. They unloaded everything," said Manson as he laid the daily newspaper on top of a stack of folders that lay on his desk.
"Yeah, and then there is the death calling guy still missing," added Roger.
"I guess now we move on, providing we still have jobs once the government finishes their investigation. Speaking of which, I have some testimony this afternoon," Jack said as he stood grabbing his coat off the back of his chair.
"I want to see it," Van Johnson said as he walked into the medical lab.
He peered into the glass to see the figure lying still.
"Is this he?" asked Johnson as he slowly touched the glass.
"Yes, sir. We have made some improvements on him. We upgraded some of the old software that was used during the war," said a man wearing a white lab coat.
"And his mind?"
"That is proving more difficult."
"How so?"
"Well, sir, the mind is a tricky thing, and our technology has not reached the point to where we can do a full mind control."
"Can you not just implant an explosive in the brain like the girl?"
"We could, but from all the tests we are going to do, it would probably explode and kill everyone around him. To be blunt, he wants to die."
Van Johnson finally turned his eyes from death calling. "Very well. Keep him in this state until we find a way."
"That could take years."
"Then let it," Van Johnson said as he pulled a cigar from his pocket.
Sweden, inside an underground laboratory.
"Well, it looks as though he's coming around,"
said one of the doctors working inside the lab.
"What has happened?"
the man on the table said as he tried turning his head.
"You were shot, and you died. But using your research, Dr. Callahan, you live again. But this time you will not be running away."
The end.
This has been Jack Manson, Operation Death Calling. Written by Tim Simpson. Narrated by Lawrence D. Palmer. Copyright 2016 by Tim Simpson. Production copyright 2016 by Tim Simpson.